Today is February 24th, 2014, and I'm talking to Pokey, and we're going to be talking about a software project called Osmand, OSMAND.
Good evening.
Well, Pokey, I heard through another HPR episode that you actually use a paper map sometimes for navigation.
I used to. I used to use paper maps an awful lot more than I do now. I used to carry one with me. I always have one in the car. I mean, there's always one, you know, for whatever state I'm in. If I can get one, I've got one in the car. I used to carry one with me all the time on my motorcycle. I've got them tacked to the wall around my office just because I like maps. And then, like, when I was a motorcycle rider, I'd come home from a weekend of exploring and riding roads I'd never been on before, and I'd highlight the ones that I rode. So for my state in New Hampshire, I'd got most of the state highlighted and a lot of the surrounding states as well. But I don't use a paper map too much anymore, though I do know how to use them. Even like topo maps, I can do elevation stuff on like trails that way. That's not that bad. But typically now I'm using some kind of software to do mapping.
Yeah, well, personally, I really like paper map and atlas, and I have a bit of a collection of them. And when I go to visit a place, I usually pick up a local map and I keep those in a file. But I see the advantage of using an electronic device, a GPS, because it locates you and there's a lot more information in it and you can page through and get to it real easy. And so, you know, hearing you talk about that, and I think you mentioned Osmand when I heard this HPR episode where you said that. And so I contacted you to see if you would want to get together with me and talk about this. And so Osmand is Global Mobile Map Viewing and Navigation for Offline and Online OSM Maps. I was going to look here and see the name Osmand, Navigation Routing Based on OpenStreetMap for Android Devices Project. I was trying to find the actual name for it here to point out what the acronym actually stands for.
Yeah, again, I forget. I can never remember that one because the AND... Maybe they changed it. Maybe now it is for Android, but it didn't used to be, and it was something just a little odd to remember. If you're switching over from paper maps to electronic maps, I'll tell you what, when I did that, the one thing about it that I found really, really frustrating is I don't have any devices that are a foot and a half tall and 12 inches wide to view a map on, and it's so frustrating not being able to see a large piece of area. For my electronic devices, they're simply, for the most part, they're simply for navigation. If I have to look at a big map and it's electronic, I need a monitor for that. I got to go home and sit down at the computer or look at a paper map.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I like to have the large format and to be able to look, you know, at different areas and fold the map and be able to kind of pick out where I'm at. I did find here where it talks about the name for Osmand. It's OSM, Automated Navigation Directions. So it's integrated with OpenStreetMap, really.
Yeah, that's a really nice thing about it is it is, in my opinion, the navigation software for people who use OpenStreetMap. It may not be the best thing out there for everyone. There's different, you know, navigation softwares out there and devices, and you know, people have their own preferences about it. But if you're a person who uses and edits OpenStreetMap, this, as far as I can tell, this is the only one that lets you use OpenStreetMap data. So your data, your edits, in a device that navigates you, offline. This thing, you pre-cache the maps, and it's got built-in routing, which a lot of the other things that I've tried over the years either didn't pre-cache the maps or couldn't do their own routing. They had to get their routing done from some server online somewhere. Like, I'm pretty sure Google Maps didn't used to have any routing locally. If you were offline, you were stuck. It seemed like offline routing, because it would update them whenever you had, you know, Wi-Fi signal at a stoplight if it was before phones or something like that. I think, if I'm remembering correctly. And then there was another one that I used to use on my N810, and I don't remember the name of that navigation software, but that couldn't do its own routing. You had to have a Wi-Fi signal or a cell signal if it was the NA10 with the cell chip in it. It had to, you know, call out for that navigation. Couldn't do it locally. And if you veered off track, it could not recalculate. You know, if you were one road over, you had to find your way back to the track it was recommending for you.
I'm interested in this offline routing and especially taking data out of OpenStreetMaps or OpenStreetMap. I know the HPR episode that Ken did with Potsdam Part 1, episode 1447, there's an interview with a Frenchman in there about OpenStreetMap. He was corrected that it's not OpenStreetMaps. I do a bit of mountain biking around, and so I'm in the forest and going up logging roads and that, and actually into trails that are sometimes just animal trails. So I like to try to get a track of that so that I can share it with other people, so that ability to edit the map and then be able to share that is really important to me. So I'm really happy to have found this Osmond, basically GPS program.
Yeah, I don't do a lot of mountain biking. I did a bit when I was a kid. Mostly now it's hiking. And I don't even really use Osmond for that. I use OSM Tracker I use, because that'll display the map. But again, you need a cell signal or you need to pan around while you've still got Wi-Fi and pre-cache that. But that's what I use for a tracker, just because it handles all the uploading and handles point-to-point notes and stuff. But I don't think that's fast enough to use mountain bike, and I think you're right that Osmond is the one for that. Plus you can do bicycle settings in Osmond. It's got different modes: car mode, walking mode, bicycle mode.
And you've mentioned this is that you can use this offline. So it is essentially, if you have a device with a GPS that collects a GPS signal that can use this program, you basically have a GPS now with a base map and actually an editable map, or a map that you edited, so you can have a local map right on your device, just like you downloaded something. And this is a free project. It's licensed GPL V3.
Yep, and as far as I know, there are three ways to get Osmond. You can get it from the F-Droid market. However, that's a much older version than current. Apparently, it's a very difficult program to compile. So to get the latest one, you have to get either the free version or the paid version from the Google Play Store. And the difference between the two is that the free version on the Play Store only allows you 10 map, or they're not all maps, so 10 content downloads. And, the paid version gives you unlimited content downloads. So the free one's great as a trial, but you'll run out of those downloads pretty quick, because you need the world base map is one. It won't work without it. If you're living in the United States, your state counts as a download, and any other state in the United States counts as a download. Voices count as downloads. The Wikipedia point of interest file, it counts as a download. And then when the maps are updated, every update counts as a download. So you'll run out, even if you just download the base map in your one state and no voices, no Wikipedia points of interest, anything like that, you're going to run out of downloads in less than a year. And then for other countries, you know, sometimes it's the whole country. So that's, you know, exactly what you'll run into. So I paid for it, and I was happy to do so. The program's fantastic. I'm happy to pay good money for good free software.
I'll point out here that I have had and still do have Garmin devices. I have two, actually. I have one that's a device that you use in the windshield of your car, which is a car GPS that plugs into the cigarette lighter for power. And then also I have a handheld Garmin. I think it's called a 60CX, which is really a good unit. But the maps alone for these devices are about $100 or more. And so the license when you support Osmond is, and I'm looking right at a website now that says it's 5.99 British pounds, or about $8 US. So it's really a value.
Yeah. The one thing I will point out with Osmond is while it does take OpenStreetMap data, it does not take the maps that, well, it doesn't take the JPEGs or you know, BMPs or whatever they are that you view when you go to the website. It instead downloads all the data, takes a snapshot of all the current data, and it makes vector-based maps. And that takes a hefty server quite some time to do it. And so you don't get up to the minute maps with Osmond. It's just the nature of the beast. You can count it as a downside if you want to, or just as a side effect of having vector-based maps, which take up much, much, much less room on your storage of your device. At the moment, they seem to be updating them about every 10 days. That process has sped up. It used to be slower, but they seem to keep updating it or upgrading it and getting the maps out quicker. So if I have to go somewhere and the address isn't on the map, I try to edit the map far enough out so that my edits will show up on my device by the time I head out there next. If not, what you can do is within Osmond itself, you can mark a point and make it a favorite and just have it navigate you to there instead. But until, for the most part, on OpenStreetMap at this time, there's not a whole lot of like building numbers and street numbers in there. So looking up a place by its name or its street number isn't always possible right now. Looking things up by crossroads is a lot more reliable, I would say.
Do you happen to know, or can you explain the difference between a vector map and a bitmap image map?
Not the technical difference. A bitmap is basically just literally what it sounds like. It's a map of pixels, a map of bits on the screen, and a value for the color for each of those pixels, for each of those bits. So if you have a 10 by 10 display, you've got 100 pixels and, you know, 8 or 16 or whatever the color depth is, you have that many bits of data for each of those 100 pixels. Now, if you wanted to do that with a map, you have to do that for the entire area that you intend to view the map on, and you have to do it at every zoom level. So, and the closer you zoom in, of course, the more pixels there are that have to be covered by that bitmap. So it's an exponential problem as you zoom in. Whereas a vector-based map, you've got a bunch of points and their coordinates on some grid. And as you zoom in, they appear to get further apart, but that grid stays the same as you zoom in. So you only have one set of points, and then the display has to kind of render them on the fly, I believe is how that works. But since there's only the one set, and since it just happens to know what it's looking at all the time, the storage space required for a vector-based map is much, much smaller than for a bitmap.
So in reality, the vector-based map then has a distinct advantage in that sense, that it is small in storage space, so you don't have to worry about that limitation on your device.
For the most part, I don't think you'd have to worry about that too much. I still don't download a whole lot of states that I'm not going to use. It, number one, it is wasted space. They're not insignificantly small. I mean, like my state of New Hampshire is pretty small. I think it was 15 or 20 megabytes. Whereas Massachusetts, which isn't, I mean, it's comparable in size, but there's a heck of a lot more data there or detail there because there's so many more buildings and so many more people working on the map, and so much more data was initially uploaded from the state, I believe. That's 115 megabytes, so it's significantly larger. So I don't download a whole lot that I'm not using for the storage space, but also because every month when they update, I'm just wasting somebody's bandwidth if I update those every month and I'm not using them, so I don't do that on mine. But Osmond does let you select the directory that you're storing them to, so if space does become an issue for you, you can just map it to your like your micro SD card.
Yeah, that makes it nice. Then you can just take them in and out as you need them.
Yeah, you can delete them and put them back in. You can do that as well, but or you mean taking out the micro SD card?
Well, you could do that, or you could move them to a different folder and then, you know, paste them back in, I suppose, when you needed them.
Yeah, nowadays I just, you know, try to buy a big enough micro SD card so I don't have to worry about it anymore.
Exactly.
I find that 16 gigabytes is plenty for my phone. That's got plenty of room for everything I need. And those are, I think you can get a 16 gigabyte card for about $8 nowadays. So I'm not too worried about that.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about that. I have an Android phone as a device that I've been using this on just for a few days now. And then also I have a 7-inch Samsung Tab 2. And so those are the devices that I've downloaded this on, and I want to say I'm really 100% pleased with its performance. In fact, it has just really thrilled me to be able to get this. And one of the real important reasons for me to even start looking at something like this is because while I have used Google for as a GPS, their mapping system and GPS system in there, I'm getting a little tired of having my movements logged. And so this, I think, is a way that I can avoid that. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, if you have it set up right, because it will, by default, track you, though it's not uploading that to anybody.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, I saw that in there, that option. So you can get it to where it saves a track as a GPX, or you can have it so that it doesn't. So, but I think that's an important thing, because in the future, you never know when someone might come back and say, hey, I noticed you were over here at a certain time. And while you can think that that might not ever be a problem, why have that information out there for people just to grab and look at whenever they want?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll throw in here, David just mentioned GPX. That's a .gpx file. It's a somewhat standardized way. It doesn't seem completely standardized to me, but it's a somewhat standardized way of placing arbitrary points on a map and potentially labeling them. It's the file output that you usually get if you take a trace of where you've been and take notes along the way, but it can also be other things like favorites or points of interest are usually exported to a GPX file, .gpx file as well.
Yeah, and I wasn't really, I'm not up as much as you are, of course, on, you know, the technical aspects of this, but I have saved things in a GPX file before and looked at them, and I know they're pretty easy. You can actually pretty much read them just by taking them into a text editor and looking at them.
Oh, neat. I didn't know that. I've never tried that. Is it like a comma separated values, or is line by line maybe?
It's kind of like that XML that comes out when you do a My Tracks with a Google. And so it actually gives the location.
Okay, neat. I was not aware of that. Yeah, if someone's going to get new into Osmond, this thing has a lot of features, and it's got multiple screens with lots of features on each one. So it can be a little confusing, all the features and all the word spaghetti that can be on the screen at sometimes with this thing. So, you know, at some point I was hoping we could go over just some settings and maybe make the thing a little more usable, for a person who's new to it. If you want to get to that at some point too.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's talk about the, screen and how to set it up. And I think we've kind of covered how to download it by going to the F-Droid Market or the Google Play Store for an Android device. And it is available for sure in the Google Play Store, because that's where I got it from. And I did not notice in there a place where you could pay for it. There's a free version there, but there is information from the OpenStreetMap wiki, and it tells you how to get it and pay for it to get the full version.
Yeah, the paid version is called Osmond Plus, and I don't remember what the free version. It might be Osmond Free. I'm not sure.
It is Osmond Free.
Yeah, so when you first start up Osmond, you get sort of a welcome screen. It's got a little information bar up top, tells you the version number, has a button for help and a button for close. And then you get four tabs that come in around the screen, like quadrants almost. The upper left is map, the upper right is search, the lower left is favorites, and the lower right is settings. And if you've never used Osmond before, the first thing you are probably going to want to do is go into the settings tab. And the very top selection there is data management. So if you hit data management, it will say click here to download or update offline data. And that's the first thing that you want to do. You want to hit that button, let it check for all the maps, and then it will give you a selection of all the things that you are able to download. It takes a few minutes. It's like checking a repo. Or maybe not a few minutes, a few seconds. Like, okay, mine just did it while I was talking. You slide your keyboard out of the way. And for some weird reason on mine, I don't know if yours is like this, David, but mine always expands a couple of the menus in here, and they're never the ones I want expanded. It always expands like worldwide and topic maps, and it always expands Oceania, which I don't know. I guess it wants me to download Peter 64's house, I guess.
Yeah, I have noticed that also, even though right now I've opened up Osmond in the Galaxy Tab 7 that I have, and it didn't do it this time.
So yeah, the first thing once you get that open is to expand the worldwide and topics map, and you want to download the world base map. It needs that to operate. So that's your first download. The next one you can tick off. I do the world altitude correction. I'm not sure exactly what it does, but it seems to be important, so I do that. It obviously corrects for altitude, but I don't know what you know, how much accuracy or it adds or inaccuracy would be there if you didn't, but I've got that selected, and I've never seen it update. The next menu down that can be expanded, or the next two actually, are voice packs. So you can do recorded voices for guidance, or you can do a text-to-speech synthesized voice. And of course, the recorded one is more natural and easy to understand, and the synthesized one has the advantage of being able to read out street names, whereas the recorded one obviously cannot.
Yeah, and I found sometimes a synthesized voice is a little hard to understand, but you just have to kind of get in the flow of it. It's like dealing with someone with an accent, say, United States from the South, or even someone that is from a foreign country. You just kind of got to lay back and get in the flow with them, and it's really good to, you can get along with it pretty easily after that.
Yeah, I agree. I typically use the synthesized voices as well. The next thing down is the worldwide Wikipedia POIs, or points of interest. The English Wikipedia, at least, that's a very large file compared to the rest of the things you might download here. That's at the moment, it's 313 megabytes. And I want to make a quick note here as well. When you see, once you've downloaded something or a file and you check against it to see if there's a newer version, it's white if you have not downloaded it, it's green if you have and it's current, and it's blue if there's an update available. And I think that whether or not there's an update available, I think it must check it against like a timestamp. Because sometimes it gets it wrong, as opposed to a version number, because sometimes it gets it wrong. I'm looking at my English wiki edition, and it says there's a new one available from 2012-11-22, whereas the one that I have is 2012-11-21. And I think that that's simply a time zone difference, because I can download that again, and it will say the same thing again. It'll say 2012-11-21. So if you look at one that's blue and you're going to update it, but it's only a day off, don't even bother updating it. That's, again, I think it's just a time zone difference, and it's an error that it's showing up as blue. If you open the worldwide Wikipedia POIs and scroll down to the English one, right?
Well, I'm seeing world ski map. I see that altitude correction.
Oh, no, it's in a, you're in a different expanded, what do they call them? Topics, maybe. So squish that one back up and scroll down below where the voice packs are, and it should say worldwide Wikipedia POIs, just above Europe and just below the voice packs. So scroll down to any one that you've already downloaded, whether it's green or blue. And if you look in the description of what you have, it will say, like, for instance, if I go US Main North America Edition 2014-02-22. And that's what I have on my device. And then on the right-hand column, it says 2014-02-22 30.8 megabytes. That's telling you what the current available version is. Every once in a while, you'll see where what you have, the version that you have installed, and the version that is available is only one day off. And no matter how many times you update that, it's still going to show up. It's still going to tell you that you can update it, but it's not. It's just an error in the date code, I think, or time zone or something. Yeah, if they're like 10 days off, go ahead and upload it, because then it takes that long to update the maps anyway. But so, yeah, as you're opening your new device and you're setting it up, now, you know, go down through the regions that you're interested in having. You know, for me, it's North America. I'll open North America and download, you know, my state and the three or four surrounding states that I might visit. You know, if you're from Texas and you're in the middle of it, that might be all you need. You know, once you download those, then you're ready to use, you know, the features of the device in earnest.
Okay, so we've got the maps, a map downloaded, or worldwide base map, and a map of the area we're interested in. So what would you say is the next thing someone would like to do or should do?
I always like to go through the settings of a piece of software or a device that I buy. So I would suggest backing up to the main settings menu. And it's a settings as a title. Data management, we've already been as the first one. The next one is general. I like to go in general and poke around in there and just see what the features are and kind of guess at the way that I might like it to operate.
Okay, so I see here, and we see the default profile is to browse map, and my use of this program, notice that it has a world globe when you get to the map, and then it also has a car, a bicycle, and a walking person. So the default profile is the browse map. So some of the features then are, or the features are enabled for the mode that you have, or the default profile. Is that right?
Not exactly. Here in this menu where you select your default profile, that will just tell you what profile or what mode it's going to be in when you first open the program. There is another place, we'll get to that later, where you set up your preferences for each of those profiles. But for now, that's just asking what you want it to open as. And I have mine set to open as browse map as well, just because usually that's what I'm doing when I open it, is browsing the map. If I want navigation, it easily switches to that mode. I mean, without even really you having to do anything, it does that.
Okay, and I'm seeing next, I see map orientation, settings for the screen orientation, a display language, a settings for use English names in maps, a driving region, which I have set for the United States, a unit of measure, so if you want to use the kilometers, the metric system, or an English measure, that's where you can set that, an app theme, and I'll stop there and let you comment.
Yep, so map orientation, you get three choices. You get don't rotate, meaning that north is always at the top of the map. You can set it to the direction of movement so that as you're driving or as you're walking, the map will rotate so that forward is at the top of the map, the direction you're moving. Or you can do to compass, which north won't be up. I'm not even sure what that would do. I don't have a compass in my device, so I don't know exactly how that would work. I'm sorry.
Yeah, maybe that's one to experiment with a bit.
But my phone doesn't have a compass. There. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I do. North is up. I don't like when the map rotates and shows me where forward is. I can figure that out by my direction of movement. The next one down is screen orientation. You have three settings. You have portrait, landscape, or same as device. And portrait, obviously, it's in portrait. Landscape's obviously landscape. And same as device means if you tip your phone sideways, it's going to go into landscape. And if you tip it back upright, it's going to go into portrait. It's fine. I leave it same as device most of the time because I usually use it when I'm walking around. But if I'm using it in a car or something, same as device doesn't work for me, because if I set the, I don't have a holder for my phone. If I set the phone down, it could flip upside down on me or some such thing. And that's always a little frustrating. So I usually try to lock that back into place if I remember it. Display language is pretty self-explanatory. English names is self-explanatory. Driving range, units of measures. Those are all self-explanatory. App theme, I think there's just dark, light, and a light with a dark action bar. You can play with that and see what you like the most. Safe mode, you can put it in. I'm not sure. I don't think I've ever enabled that. I've never had a problem with the way it operates, but apparently if you have trouble with it, you can try safe mode, and it runs slower but more stable. And the next one is the storage directory, and that's where you can tell it where you want it to store your maps. And like I said before, I like to put them on my my micro SD card, just because there's much more room on that than there is built in.
Yes, and this is one you really do want to set up, so that I got mine on the device storage, and I had to go back in and rework that.
Yeah, and this is where this is where being a Linux user helps, because if it says /mount/SD card or other, and if you hit other, you can type in where you want it to go, but it's not like a folder menu that you browse to and get it there. You've got to type in the directories with the slashes. So for a Linux user, that's going to be real natural and easy to do. For a Windows user, you might have to take a few minutes to figure that out, because it's just not the way you're used to doing stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the a lot of the features here and the way the software is set up is certainly has the flavor and feel of an open source project where people have worked on and use other open source software. So the thing is, the design has that feel.
Yeah, it definitely does. It's a very organic design where features change as people notice them as well, or notice the lack of them. Below storage directory, there's use Kalman filter. I have no idea what that is. I think that that's, it may be, and I could be wrong about this, I think that that's the correction that you use, because a compass doesn't point up, obviously, because a globe is round, not a flat piece of paper. So as you take that round globe and flatten it out and represent it as a flat map, the compass no longer points to the top of that map. So there's a correction there, depending on where you are and how far away from, I think it's International Dateline, but it might be, I don't know. There's a correction, and I think that's what that is, but I could be completely wrong about that.
And interesting that there is a checkbox for this to either turn it on or turn it off, so it must have some definite changes if you use or do not use it. So experimenting with it to figure that out, how you like it, might be important.
Yeah, and then the last thing below that is voice guidance output, and that just lets you choose the channel that the voice guidance comes out on, whether it's your music or media channel or your notification channel or your voice call audio. And I think probably all that is going to matter is the priority, you know, whether it's going to mute the audio that you're already listening to hear this, or whether you're, you know, not going to hear it because you're on the phone or whatever. I think that's all that has to do with.
Be it the navigation screen.
Yes, and this is where your specific options come in. So when you hit navigation, it gives you a little pop-up that says profile specific settings, and then it's got car, bike, and walking. Now, whichever one of these you select, all of the settings you do until you hit the back arrow are going to be for that profile. So you basically have to go through this three times. You do once for the car, once for the bike, and once for walking. And that's how you set the different behavior modes.
Okay, so I've selected the car setting, push the little car icon button, and it has things in here like choose an online or offline navigation service. Osmond goes for the choose for the fastest route, enable to calculate the fastest route, or disable for the shortest route.
Yep, that's navigation service. It gives you a couple of choices. Osmond is the only offline choice. The other ones are online. They might be more accurate. I'm not sure. I haven't bothered trying to use them. Fastest route, if you check that, it's gonna take you the route from point A to point B in the shortest amount of time. If you uncheck it, it'll take you the shortest amount of distance, which could be a longer trip time-wise. That's all that is.
Interesting. You really want to make sure that when you do routing with a GPS device that you kind of get an idea of where you're going, because there was a story here in southern Oregon where some people went from the coast and were heading across to connect up with Interstate 5, and there's a small mountain range there. They got off track by following a GPS device, and snow started getting deep, and they finally got stuck, and I think one of them died in the thing. People, they looked and looked and looked for them. So you do want to realize that when you use a GPS device, you have to use some common sense with it too. It's not perfect.
Yeah, and that's an extreme case. I mean, you hear minor cases all the time. There was a story in the papers early last week, this week, last week. A fellow from out of state was driving in Massachusetts and following his GPS, and it told him to turn left, and apparently or right, whatever, it told him to turn, and he missed the specific turn and took the next one, and he happened to turn onto railroad tracks and drove down the railroad tracks until a train hit his car. So I don't know how he didn't know he was on railroad tracks. It's going to be the bumpiest road ever. And fortunately for him, he saw the train and got out of the car, and he was not harmed. But yeah, stuff like that can happen all the time. My wife's brother hopped in somebody else's car, a family member's car, and went where he needed to go, and didn't know how to get home. And he just told the thing, "Home, take me home." Well, it wasn't set for the family's home; it was set for somebody else's home, and they drove a couple hours in the wrong direction.
Wow. I was going to say, and I'll probably cut this out, but that wasn't Jonathan Nadeau with the railroad track thing, was it?
No, it was him with the pushing the home button, though.
Yeah, I'm sure.
As far as the fastest route goes, for myself, when I'm in the car, time is usually more valuable than distance. So for the car mode, I'll tell it fastest route. For walking and bicycling modes, I want the shortest distance. I don't want to have to go, walk an extra half mile just because my navigation device thinks it's faster. I want the shortest route.
Next on the list is Auto Center Map View, and then time until the map view synchronizes with the current position, which is if I'm driving in that, I kind of want that to happen at a certain instance so that I can see where I'm going and what's coming up.
Yeah, and that's a neat one when I think about it, because so for the car, I set that for 15 seconds. For when I'm walking, I don't even know what I have it set for. I don't really care. But on a bicycle, I want that real fast, because if I have to glance down on a bicycle, I want to be able to just take a quick snapshot and look back at where I'm going. I think you want that shortest one on a bicycle. I do anyway.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And then I typically try to stay off the roads as much as I can with a bike and ride in the woods, but so I don't know that I'd need actual directions, though sometimes it's handy if you're trying to get on a trail that you don't know where you're at. And but yeah, I'd say set that up, find out what works for you and set that correctly. There's lots and lots of choices there.
Yeah, and the next one down, you've got Auto Zoom Map. And I think that's going to depend more on the size of your device. So my phone, it's in like the 3.5 inch class of phones, and I have it set to close up. If any further than that, and if I get into a busy area, visually busy, where there's a lot of stuff displaying on the map, anything further out than close up, I can't make heads or tails of it.
And the auto zoom feature, it works according, it says, to your speed. So as you slow down in that, the zoom will be enabled. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe it is. I haven't paid super close attention to it while I'm driving, mostly because I don't have a mount for my phone, so I tend to use my TomTom device that has the windshield suction cup. If I had a mount for my phone, I'm pretty sure I would almost completely stop using the TomTom and be able to answer your question.
And just as we're talking about this, I mean, I'm looking at all these features that we haven't even went through all of them yet and haven't talked about, we've talked about a percentage of them. And when you look at these features, you realize just how much work has went into this navigation program here. And then to think that this is a free software program, I just really get feeling good about this. And there are some people, if they owned this, would charge quite a bit for it and tell you how important these features are.
Oh my gosh, and these features are just in the menus. Wait till we get to the main screen where, I mean, you can customize that main screen to display or not display, or display only in a pull down when you select it. So many different things. You can cover your screen and not be able to see the map if you enable everything. But yeah, there, this, like I said, this is a featureful piece of software. And if there's not enough features for you here, not enough menu options, there's plugins. There's like a dozen plugins that all have their own feature set.
Yeah, I know. This is just amazing to me. I mean, I had used the OSM tracker, the one there, a little bit to try to do some stuff to contribute to OpenStreetMap. But when I found this, I mean, I'm just thrilled with it. And the next item here is show alarms and is for to configure traffic warnings, speed limits, four stops, speed bumps, speed camera warnings, and lane information. And this is really a big one. I mean, if you know you're coming up on that speed camera, maybe you want to go the other way or around that stoplight camera.
Yep. So yeah, exactly. And then if I'm hiking, the last thing I want is some alarm going, "Hey, there's a speed bump coming up," or a speed camera. I want the thing to be quiet. So this is where you're kind of individualizing it for the use case that you're going to have.
Exactly. And if you're hiking fast enough to have to worry about a speed bump, well, you're pretty good.
Yeah, for real. And then there's, you can avoid things like toll roads, unpaved roads, ferries, motorways, which is weird because why would you want to avoid a motorway? Well, if you're on foot, a lot of times it's not legal to walk on them, so you might not have that box checked under the car option, but you would under the bicycle and hiking option or walking option. Or you might have your bicycle settings set up as a motorcycle, who knows? Most of the rest of these are pretty self-explanatory, except for the very bottom one, precise routing, which is an alpha feature. If you enable precise routing, you will get better routing, but it only works for short distances. And I forget what they said the distances are. Whether I thought the guy said it was 200 kilometers, but he might have said only 20 kilometers. I really forget. If you turn that off, you get less accurate routing, but it's, almost sure to work. You might have to give it some time to work. So the workaround for this, I believe, is to enable the precise routing, but then when you select your destination and tell it to plan it out, you can, there's a checkbox there for selecting a possible non-optimized route, which I think is the workaround for that. And that's the way I have mine set up, is checkbox for precise routing and checkbox for possible non-optimized route for long distances.
Okay, so and that's an interesting feature, and I was playing a little bit with that, and it was a little bit confusing for me, so I'm glad you explained that. I'd like to jump back up here, though. After show alarms, there is an announce configuration where you can have the voice announce when you are violating the speed limit and where there's camera warnings and announce street names and that, which is really, really handy.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So I'm going to hit the back button. We're going to show up in the plugin tab then, correct?
Yeah. Okay, so the plugin tab, this is where I had some stuff enabled that David didn't, so I think I did. But there's some different plugins here. One of them, the top one on my menu anyway, is online maps. And first you think, why would you want online maps if the whole advantage of this thing is that it uses offline maps? Well, because some of the online maps are satellite images, so you can get Bing satellite image on there, which makes it kind of feel more like Google Maps if you're used to looking at stuff with trees and houses in the background. But also if you're navigating downtown in a city and you've got good cell connection the whole time, why not use the online maps? They're going to be up to the minute. So that's something that I enable on mine.
Okay, and I have that enabled also, and as you check these things, there's a little small explanation of what they're all about, and it said this is for show settings to configure a variety of online or cache tile maps as base map or overlay underlay maps. These maps can also be prepared offline and copied to the Osmin folder. So there's pretty much a lot of power there.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that with everything in the plugin menu, selecting the box really only gives you more menu options. It doesn't, you know, change too much about the way the device operates until you find those menu options too. So most of them are pretty safe to check.
And then the next one is logging services and sleep mode.
Yep, and this is what you said you were interested in, where you can track where you're going, and the device can go to sleep in your pocket and save battery life and save the, you know, the power it's using from the screen, and it will still track and record your trips and look at where you're going. This one I do not have checked off because I use a different piece of software for it, but this you might be interested in, David.
If I had this unchecked, then would that keep Osmin from tracking me with a GPX file by downloading that to my device?
I believe that is correct.
Okay, so going stealth, this is the one you might want to keep unchecked.
Yeah, exactly. The next one down is accessibility, and it just says show settings for special accessibility features. I have not messed around with accessibility. I probably should have, and Jonathan's probably going to browbeat me for it when I see him at NELF, but I haven't messed with it. I don't know what those settings are.
Yeah, and a lot of times, a sighted person, the accessibility features kind of get in the way because they're not really, they're kind of add more noise to your situation, so you might not want to have that checked if you don't have a limitation that you need accessibility features for. Though sometimes it's really nice to enable accessibility features to see what's going on with them, and it can actually give you more information.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good way of putting it too, that it can enable more noise. So more often than not, I disable accessibility features on my systems. Next one below that is the parking position plugin, which I am not sure, that may be a separate download. I think it used to be. Do you have that on your menu?
No, I believe that is a separate download because mine doesn't have that in it. And I saw that in the Play Store that you can download that. And I didn't download it, so I'm not seeing it at all.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be that big of a deal. It's basically you stop driving, you get out of your car, and you're going to go into the mall or someplace like that where there's a big parking lot. And it basically just lets you mark your spot and will guide you back to that spot. There's other built-in ways of doing that, so I don't think I've ever used it. Maybe once just to see what it was about, but you can do it with a favorite as well. It's just a favorite you'd want to delete when you're done, and it's a bigger list to search through as opposed to here it is and there it is and now it's gone, which is, I think, how it works.
There are some that need this.
Oh, for sure. There are definitely people who are going to benefit from a parking position plugin. I mean, how many times you see people walking out of the mall, you know, at a good clip, and as soon as the door shuts behind them, they stop and they look left and they look right and they look lost.
I try to avoid the mall, but I've seen that happen. I know of people that are going around pushing the unlock button to try to hear the horn go off on their car.
Yes, or the trunk button. Let's try to hope they find the car that the trunk pops open on. I've seen that too.
Exactly. So, but my goal is to stay away from the mall.
And yeah, mine too. But that's where you see that.
Exactly.
Okay, so next is a distance calculator and planning tool. That one is kind of neat. Don't understand it fully. I'm afraid to mess with it too much. But if you enable it, the thing that I've been able to do with it, it lets you measure distance between two or more points on the map. You start it off in a spot, you touch another spot, and it tells you, okay, that's 100 yards. And you hit another spot, and now it gives you another, like a running total as you tap spots throughout the map. There's no undo on that, if I recall, so you kind of have to get it right or get it close and not be too picky about it. But there's other features of that where it says you know, that it's editing stuff. So I don't know if that attempts to log you into OSM, and I've been a little afraid to do that. So I haven't explored that one too much. I used a distance calculator on it occasionally, though.
Yes, when I see a feature like this, I realize that it's probably got a pretty neat use case, and probably more than one, and you can probably dream up things on your own once you're used to it, how to use it. So when I see something like this, I realize that there is some geek has been involved in this or had a need and put this in there. I can think of one thing where you might use this measuring is to be able, if you say we're going to a piece of property and you knew that the survey stake was, say, 600 or 800 feet from where you were at in a certain direction, and you knew about where it was at, you could measure that map thing, or using that measuring tool, might be able to help find that.
Yeah, for sure. That would definitely work. As I said in the previous show that I did on this, what I use it for is, you know, I'll find where I plan on hunting. If I plan on going to a specific, you know, ground blind or tree stand or spot like that, I'll find that spot and then just measure to the nearest house and make sure that there's, you know, a legal amount of distance between me and that house to shoot a gun, or measure the thickness of the woods, you know, so you get a feel for whether it's safe or not. You really, a topographical map is much better for judging safety, but and being there, of course, but it's a way to use it, and it is a way that I do use it.
Yeah, around here I don't think people measure off-road before they fire their guns. You can hear them going off all the time. Okay, next we have audio-video notes. Take a audio-video note during the trip. And I actually used this the other day as I pulled into my driveway. I turned a video on, and it took my phone and recorded a video of me driving down the driveway toward the house. And I don't know exactly where that goes, but it looked pretty damn neat. And it puts a little tick on the map there that note is there.
Okay, neat. Yeah, I'm sure it only goes to the directory that you have everything stored to. So your SD card, perhaps. But yeah, that's kind of neat. I haven't enabled that one. So you're the expert on that one there.
Well, I'm wondering if you could take this and put this up somehow in OpenStreetMap to where it would be valuable to somebody else or to yourself later on.
Yeah, I'm not sure. With the other tracking software that I use, OSM Tracker, you can take audio notes, you can take photographs, but I haven't seen a way to display them on OpenStreetMap, so I'm not sure what their purpose is. That's if anybody knows, I'd, you know, be more than happy to hear from you, because I just don't know what the advantage of those are.
Okay, and the next one is really a big one, I think. OSM editing, show settings needed for OSM feedback, like collecting, modifying OSM or OpenStreetMap's points of interest objects, opening, commenting OSM bugs, and contributing recorded GPX files. And it says requires OSM credentials, which I'm assuming is just making an account on OpenStreetMap, which is free, of course.
Yeah, and that's another one that kind of scares me. I like to do my editing with a mouse in the editor that I'm familiar with, or this may just upload traces. I don't know. I'm a little afraid to explore with that one and you know, cause damage to the map that someone would have to undo, because I don't know how to undo edits from OpenStreetMap.
Yeah, it would be interesting to explore this a little bit more and get some information on it, because you can wreck contributions others have made that are worthwhile to OpenStreetMap, so that's really important. But my experience is that you almost need to do work in the editor in order to get things saved up there, but it is easy to wreck something.
Yeah, I have. It's not super easy to wreck something, but, you know, start small, work your way up. Don't try to edit waterways. That'll screw you up real bad. Something that's got, you know, 15, it's got more than the maximum allowed number of points. Don't go try and editing that or deleting that on your first go.
That's a good point. And I get a newbies list off OpenStreetMap, comes into a Yahoo email address that I have. And I noticed there was quite a bit of complaints on there about newbies getting onto the map and creating damage on it and making, reversing other people's work, and they'd have to go back in and fix it. So if you are interested in OpenStreetMap, just keep that in mind, that it is a valuable resource. People have put time in on it, and we want to do our best effort there.
Yeah, for sure. And the last one down the bottom is Osmin Development. So show settings for development and debugging features like root simulation or rendering performance display. I do not have that one checked, but I am subscribed to the Osmin mailing list. So I try to, help out with bugs that way instead of doing the development right on the phone.
Yeah, good point. And I hardly know what debugging is, Pokey, so you have to understand my skill level here. So that might be something I would need to learn some things about.
I'm assuming it's basically just like your frame rate or maybe where in memory it's being stored. It really could be anything the developer wants to know, I believe. But I don't think it's nothing I mess with either. So I just leave that one off.
Okay, online maps. Did we talk about that already?
No, I don't think we did. So that's if we hit the back arrow and go back to the settings menu, then the next one down is online maps.
And there's a whole bunch of options in here, things to check and to choose. So I don't know if we want to go through each one of those or just point out that this is there and for, if you're interested in getting this program, you understand this is going to be a option that's available, and there's lots of choices here.
Okay, so the way that I treat this one, and I'll just run right through this real quick. Online and tile maps, I do not check the box here because you can do this from within the viewing screen of the map itself if you set that up properly. And this will turn it on and leave it on, and I don't think you can turn it back off. Or the one from the main screen turns this on and off as you're using it. I'm not sure, but this one is not checked for me. Tile map source, I have that set to MapNIC, which is the OpenStreetMap, something to do with displaying. I'm not entirely certain, but it is MapNIC is OpenStreetMap, same thing. I do have use internet checked so that it can download stuff. Minimum vector zoom level. I don't know if the lower number means more zoomed in or more zoomed out, so I don't touch that one because I don't know what it means. Let me see. Overlay map and underlay map. At the moment, I have none selected, so I'm not worried about that. Overlay transparency is zero, so I'm not time to worry about that. And base map transparency is from 0 to 255, and mine is at 202. It could probably go up to – I could probably put it at 205 and not worry about it either. So that's that for the online maps.
Okay, the next category is logging services and sleep mode. Configure how to record trips and enable sleep mode.
And that's something that you have enabled and I do not. That's okay. One of your plugins.
Yeah, and so it has log track to GPX file is available, and you can put a check mark in there. Has a logging interval. Then there's a place in the middle for profile specific settings for this. If you pick the car, it's going to give you logging interval, save current GPX track, log track to GPX file. There's just a bunch of choices here. Online tracking, there we go. Send tracking to a specific web service or online tracking interval. Specify online the interval you want for online tracking.
I saw a neat application of that several years ago at a lug meeting where a guy had a small GPS device constantly uploading its position to a server, and he would take that in his plane with him and fly across country, and you could just always see where the guy's plane was at, or his motorcycle if he was adventuring on his motorcycle. It was really cool. It was a neat application. I don't think I want my phone doing that.
No, staying gray probably is more of an interest to me than having people know where I'm at, putting a bright light on me.
Right on.
So these same options seem to be available for the bicycle also.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and that's my last menu option under settings here. There's an about, which, just gives you about information, same as any would be. So do you have any other menu options there?
Well, I'm seeing logging services and sleep mode, then some more about accessibility, audio and video settings, OSM editing. Did we already go through this in OSM development?
Well, these are plugins that you have enabled that I don't have enabled, so I don't have the menu options for them.
Yeah, many times I'll just enable everything and then just weed the nuisance items out later on. And sometimes that causes problems, and then sometimes it's nice.
Well, it does. I think it does with a thing like this because there's so many options. Sometimes you can't find the nuisance item. It becomes a needle in a haystack.
Yeah, that's good. The good and bad of having a program that's full-featured is that there is lots there, but then also you have a somewhat of a learning curve. But I will say when you do get something learned, it's really worthwhile. You can become a or get really good power use out of it.
Oh, yeah, I can agree with that 100%, especially something like this that's just got menu after menu of features in there.
Okay, then are we going to jump back then to the main screen, the four big tiles on it?
Yeah, why don't we do that? And from the main screen, just hit map. Let's get into the map. Time to look at that, I think.
Okay, so I've hit map, and of course, I live in Oregon, so I have the Oregon map showing up.
Yeah, now here is where it's going to look different depending on what you're doing with the thing. There's several different ways it's going to look different. The first one is that in the bottom left-hand corner, whatever your default setting, that should be what came up. So mine is a little picture of a globe, meaning that I'm in the map browsing mode for this. It's not going to be in the, but you can change it by hitting that picture. You can change it to the car mode, bicycle, pedestrian mode. Right below there's a little gray button. That's a menu button. That's not to change the mode that it's in. So there's actually two buttons there.
Right. And just to the right of that, my map is showing a scale, which mine is set now at 200 feet, and then a zoom in and zoom out, where it's actually zoom out and zoom in, the little magnifying glass with the plus and minus in it.
Yep, I've got that as well. Next, on the top bar, mine's got a transparent bar with some buttons on it. On my phone, they're really small buttons, but one that you want to hit now that I would suggest we all go through now is the one that looks like a gear, and that's the settings for your screen here.
Right, and once you hit that, you get it looks like a Chinese food menu here. There's so many options.
Yeah, really, and there's four tabs. You've got tab for map browsing, car, bicycle, and pedestrian, and you can set each of these to be what you want. So I can run through these pretty quickly. The first one is compass. Okay, so the first thing is all these you'll notice have checkboxes. If there is no check in the box, obviously that item is not displayed. If there is a check in the box, it will be displayed. And for some of them, there's a third function. What does it look like? There'll be a check in the box, but in the description, there'll be hyphens before and after the word. And what that means is that it's in a hideable pull-down menu. So keep that in mind, that some of the things you might want sometimes, you might not always want, you can pull down and inspect those. And then, for instance, when I'm driving, I try to use as few of these things as possible. But sometimes when I'm driving, I want to know my altitude. So I have that in the pull-down menu. Or I want maybe to know the parking plugin. You can put that in a pull-down menu. Those are just some of the things that you can do there. So for mine, the first section here is status bar. There's the compass. If you put the compass up there, you can tap the compass and change the mode so that it's either north is up, or it's tracking compass direction, or it's tracking your movement direction. The next one is the logging services button. Kind of opens an on-the-fly menu for those things. I have that disabled, so I can't really go into much more detail. There's a lock screen button so that you're not accidentally hitting the thing and changing stuff. You can enable street names, the street name that you're on will show up in that top menu bar. Map layers is how you adjust the online data. Your base map here is going to be in the center layer, and you can do an underlay and an overlay. I don't know why you would do both. I don't know why both exist. I think either or works just fine for me. But then again, that's as powerful a power user as I can be at this point. Somebody else is going to be better. There's the gear for the configure screen, which I like to have there so I can get at it. There is a where am I button, which anytime you hit that, it will center the map on your location. That's the status bar or the top panel. There's a right-hand panel, which has got a waypoint flag. Tells you the distance to your next waypoint. And probably, no, it's not a turn, but do distance to your next waypoint. Destination is distance, maybe time. I forget which. And the waypoint, too, distance or time. To your destination, it's got the parking plug-in access to that. Time to go to your final destination is another one. Your current speed. You can enable, disable, or hide that. So for instance, you probably want that in a car, but probably don't care about it for any of the other features, except for maybe bicycle. GPS info will tell you like how many satellites you're picking up on. Speed limit can be really handy if you want to know the speed limit where you're at, and if someone has put that into OpenStreetMap for you, or if you're able to put that in yourself, that one can be tremendously helpful. You can get an altitude reading. You can get the distance measurement, which is the plugin I was talking about. I keep that in a pull down for all of these, and I can just measure distance between two points on the map as opposed to having to guesstimate them. There's a left-hand panel that tells you your next turn, a smaller version of your next turn, and your second next turn, which means the one after your next turn. They're miscellaneous things. Map style is not a checkbox. You change the style of the map there. Day-night map, I believe that's just, yep, you tell it whether you want day or night or whether you want it to be linked to your light sensor or to the sunrise-sunset times. The ruler is the scale of the map on the bottom, I believe. Destination direction. That's a tricky one if you enable that. That one confused me for a little bit. It just points at your destination no matter how far off the map it is. If you have that enabled, that might throw you off a bit. You know, what the heck is that extra little blue thing? It's like ghosted on there.
I really like that because do I can you? Tell. I can. Well, mine shows up as a red triangle if we're talking about the same thing.
Probably
sometimes
are.
Sometimes I'm in a location like from when I drive from work, it's an hour to my home, and it's unbelievable. Where you think mentally where your house is at and where it really points to. And I think that's really nice for getting a visual of how your area is really laid out and what, you know, what your location is, because I get turned around because of the way the roads run. They don't always run east, west, north, and south.
Yeah, yeah. Why is this thing pointing over my right shoulder? I'm trying to go home.
I have the same thing happen when sometimes I'll see the moon and the road I go on, it changes direction, and all of a sudden the moon will look like it's in the wrong spot. So it's kind of a wake-up call, and it maybe just shows that I don't have a very good sense of direction.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, as you're driving, it gets tougher too because there's so many small turns in the road that you don't even register as turns.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so there was what are we doing? Destination direction, transparent skin. I think that just means the menu bars there, not the actual layers of the map. And then there's rendering attributes of the map. You can show contour lines at different zoom levels. There's a rendering mode. What is rendering mode? Optimized for browse, car, bicycle, or pedestrian. I'm not even sure what the difference, what would change there. It always seems to be fairly optimized. You can hide polygons, which means you hide like buildings they would not display on there, or perhaps even lakes or swimming pools might not display. I'm not entirely certain there. Hide boundaries would hide the like the town lines, and a roads only map is a kind of minimized version of OpenStreetMap that's just the roads, so that it's less confusing, which is probably pretty helpful on a smaller device. But because I spend so much time editing the map, I like to see what is there and what isn't. So I leave roads only turned off.
Yeah, and like always, you know, when there's an option, there's a use case for that. So try it out and see how it goes, because it might be something you really like.
Yeah, and when you get through that list and setting it up the way you like it, There's another tab for your car. You can do it all again. And then another one for bicycle, another one for walking. So it'll actually even display in different ways depending on what you're doing with it.
Yeah, just the sheer volume of the settings you can put in here, just it makes this a little intimidating maybe, but it also makes it quite useful. And once you have it set up, it really is an intriguing application.
Yeah, I really like it a lot. So once you get all that done, maybe the next thing to do, real quick, because this one confused me for a while. I have the layers button up on there, and if you hit the layers, it's going to pull up yet another menu, and it's going to ask you several different things. It'll let you show points of interest on the map, points of interest labels on the map. It'll let you show your favorites on the map. Which, if I'm driving, I don't want to see my favorites. I have too many of them. I'm going past them all the time. Points of interest I may or may not want to see. Those are not specifically points of interest like, oh, there's a monument ahead. They can be anything. Like, there's a pharmacy over there, or there's a mailbox, or a bathroom, a public restroom. They can be just about anything. So they may be too overwhelming as well. The map source lets you choose your base map. So offline vector map is a good choice for that. But if you scroll way down, you can select an overlay or an underlay map. And say you select the overlay map, now it gives you sources for that. If you select Microsoft Earth, you're going to get a slider at the bottom of your screen for the transparency of Microsoft Earth. So you can kind of morph your map how you like it to where you see the roads and the satellite image over that. That's how you get that done.
Okay, and
slows things down on my phone.
Right, and that can be bad. Now I'm trying to get back to where we were.
We can be anywhere you want now because I just kind of finished up the menus. I think a good thing to do at this point is to locate your house on the map and create a favorite for your home. And start creating a couple of favorites and learning how that works.
So you're suggesting that I'm at home now, so let's find myself and create a favorite out of that?
Yeah, if you're home, that's a good way to do it. You can just hit the locate me button, or you can browse around the map until you find your home and, you know, find where it should or would be on the map. And all you have to do is when you find the spot you want to make a favorite out of, you just long press on that until you get a little, looks like a speech bubble almost, and it'll say location, latitude, longitude, and have a close button on it. And if you hit the close button, it disappears and you get to do it again. But if not, you can hit the center of that bubble and it'll pull up yet another menu. You can get directions to, set as destination, directions from, search near here, share location, add to favorites, or mark as a parking position. Now, I was talking about adding it to favorites. So if we hit that, it lets you give a name to that spot and it lets you categorize your favorites. So, you know, I have categories such as friends and family and shopping places and hiking trails and all kinds of stuff like that. And you can, you just type in what you want and hit add and it'll add it there.
Yeah. And then so planning your categories, kind of an important step, but it's pretty easy to make new categories and change them. And there's even a replace button here for if you want to change what category the favorite is in.
Yep. And so if you wanted to do some actual navigation with the thing, that's the way I like to do it, is to find where I want to go on the map, add a favorite to that spot, because if I'm going somewhere, there's a good chance I'm going to go there again. And from the map, you can hit the menu button, or you can back out one screen to that greeting screen and go to the favorites tab and locate what you're looking for in there. You find the spot you're looking for, tap on it, and you get yet another menu, a little pop-up dialog. You can get directions to that spot, set it as a destination, show it on the map, edit the favorite or delete the favorite. And the difference between setting something as a destination and getting directions is directions is actual navigation. Setting as destination just kind of puts a flag on it for the time being, and you can start your navigation at a later time. You can also stop your navigation and it's not going to delete that destination. You got to do that manually.
Okay, so I guess we're at having created a favorite and understanding how to put points actually, or way, I guess I'd call these waypoints in the map of places you want to go or return to.
Yep.
And it's very, very easy to do. And in fact, this is quite a bit easier to use than, say, some handheld GPS devices where it might take you quite a bit of time to do this since you have a software keyboard available.
Oh, man, it takes so long to put favorites into my TomTom. It's ridiculous. It doesn't like half of the buttons you press, and it doesn't cooperate, and you can only put in, like, street numbers, which never line up where you want. This is so much better.
Yeah, there is probably someone from Finland or somewhere that's really fast at doing that and is probably scoffing at you, but, boy, I certainly find these things a lot of times to be just real heavy time consumers. So I'm happy to see that Osmond really has a really efficient way to put favorites in.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And every once in a while, you got to go somewhere you don't know where it is. And they have if you go back to the main menu there, not the main menu, but the like the welcome screen sort of, there's a search function. And that lets you do several different kinds of searches. I like the one that's got a little house icon as an address search. So you put in your region, which in the United States is the state you're in, your city, your street, and 9 out of 10 times, unless you're editing OpenStreetMap and putting street numbers in, you're going to have two streets, which means it's going to direct you to a crossroad, not a house number.
Right. And then, of course, OpenStreetMap, where there is a lot of data in OpenStreetMap that was taken from data from the U.S., I mean, it's basically open and they took it in. There isn't a lot of address-specific information that's actually been downloaded into OpenStreetMap, and that big download, I guess I'd call it the big download when the U.S. government allowed them to download that information.
Yeah, when they imported I think they call them the Tiger maps, but they were the U.S. Geological Survey map from, I don't know, whatever point they took it in at.
Yeah, you can say it so much better than I can. I just know it happened, and it's, yeah, good enough.
Yep, and then there's also in the search menu, let me see, you can do an address search. You can do you can put in specific coordinates. It'll find that point. You can search your favorites, which I don't know why you wouldn't just look for them in the menu. There's a search history. There's a transportation search. I'm not sure how that works. Probably finds buses and trains for you. That information is not always completely up to date for the more rural places. The city centers, I bet it's pretty accurate for, but I don't live in one, so I can't speak to it. And there's also a point of interest search where you can browse through or search for specific stuff like fuel or public parking or public transport, food shops, emergency entertainment, all kinds of point of interest type stuff in here.
Again, this is just, I mean, if you haven't seen this, it's worth just looking at to see all the features that are here and all the options that are available to search for. I used the search by name today to do a little test run when I went down to see my wife at the hospital, and I put in the hospital name, and sure enough, I could even go to the helipad there where the emergency helicopter comes in. It was in the map.
I love adding helipads, and that might make me a nerd, but I'm comfortable with that.
Good enough, yes. Okay, so where do we want to go from here? If we go back to the main menu, I think we've pretty well covered just about everything that's here.
I think we have too. I mean, except for maybe specific use cases, but I've kind of been talking about mine the whole time.
Yeah, and since I'm sort of a new user, I don't have a lot of specific use cases except what I've talked about, and I really plan on using this. I can just see that this is going to be my friend for navigation here, this application, because it's just so full-featured, and I really love the fact that it's open source and free and that you can contribute to it. It's a avenue to be able to give back to the community and actually make your life and other people's lives better.
Oh, it definitely is. One feature that I like about this that's just kind of built in, which you might not even notice, you might not even pick up that it does it, but if you're just panning around the map and browsing the map, if you've got no destination set and no navigation going on, and you back out to like the main screen, it'll minimize for a little while and then eventually shut itself down. So that you can do the main screen of your Android system. I mean, so that you can do, you know, email or whatever else you got on your phone or device. If there's navigation going on, it minimizes itself to like the system tray and just keeps running and running and running. And in your notification area, you'll see, you know, the little, the circle, like little target reticle with the dot in it, you know, for GPS. Tap that and it pops you right back open to, you know, where your position on the map is and you're navigating. And I think it even, you know, keeps broadcasting on the sound channels too, so you can be doing other things and still get your turn-by-turn directions from it. It was just one little feature that I kind of liked.
Yeah, and this, I can't stress enough to people that are listening that might be thinking about taking, you know, downloading this and using it, just how nice I think this looks. And I know I don't have I don't like sometimes a lot of flashy stuff that where it's real stylish, but I like something that's really, really functional and really gets down to the basics, but yet has a lot of options. And this really just fits for me. And I just can't tell you how pleased I am to have found this. And actually the reason why I even dug around and started looking for this is because I heard you talking on Hacker Public Radio about this, the paper map thing with someone else. And I thought, I've got to check that out. And then I got a hold of you and thought, you know, we could get together and talk about it. And, you know, as usual, I'm kind of like the pilot fish hooked onto the shark and feeding off the crumbs, you know. And so that's, I mean, you certainly know a lot about this. And I don't know how many years you've used it, but you seem to have good knowledge of it. So I'd say you're the expert.
Maybe in this topic, but a lot of times I'm the same with the pilot fish thing. And I know what you mean about this looking good. It's not a flashy thing, but to have the map displayed on your crisp phone screen as compared to, you know, the chunky, blocky, resistive touch screens that come with car navigation, it really is like a step up in like quality. It looks and feels much more quality than, you know, those devices that you suction cup to your windshield.
And I think a real advantage when you do have a smartphone to be able to get this type of a package or application in there, it's really wonderful. And then of course the being free and being developed by others, you just look at this and look at the depth of it and understand for me what this would sell for. If someone was actually trying to market this and sell this, how they would market all the options that it has and the detail that it has. And it's a wonderful application. And I just hope other people will download it and use it and contribute to the project. And I plan on contributing to get the entire, you know, worldwide maps and unlimited downloads and that. And I'm telling you, it's a bargain if you send them just the price they ask for it.
And let me step back to and tell you something else that it can do for you that nothing else can do is, as I'm panning around the map here and we're discussing this and I'm looking at it, most people, if you're following along at home and doing this, you're going to see some combination of like white roads and yellow roads and that kind of thing. I'm an OpenStreetMap editor. I spend time improving the map in my area where I see things and know things and can research things or drive by and have a look at it. So as I'm panning around, I'm not looking at yellow and white lines. I'm looking at a highly detailed map with buildings and fields and railroad tracks and forests, parking lots, mini storages, golf courses. And these are all things that I've added to the map. And it's so extraordinarily satisfying to know that my contributions actually count. You can, you know, like with a TomTom, you can change those speed limits on the roads all you want and pretend you're uploading them and pretend that somebody is looking and caring. And they pretty much just go nowhere. It's like the old days of Windows XP when you click the button to report a problem and hope that you're, you know, hey, they're going to fix that problem because I reported it. It's never going to happen. this thing has a very real, very tangible feedback loop with your contributions to an open source project, to the OpenStreetMap. And I can't begin to tell you how gratifying that is when I look at this map and see, hey, I did that. I did that. It's just really heartwarming.
Yeah, you cannot, at least for me, I don't know that some people understand the value of being able to participate in editing a map and contributing these things, because it just makes so much sense that you can, someone has built a platform that you can easily use, you can contribute, and other people can get value out of it, and you actually can get your own value, like you're talking about putting your points of interest in, your destinations and that. So I really applaud the OpenStreetMap and the developers of Osmond for what they've done, and I believe that people should support the project. And since I don't buy much software, very little in fact, I try to take at least part of that money and send it to open source projects, because they're actually doing something good for other people, and it's all of us making the world a better place.
I couldn't say that any better if I tried.
Well, Pokey, thank you for coming on with me tonight. I know we've got an hour and 37 right now into this. It might be a little shorter when we get done editing it.
Ooh, a short one. Hour and 37.
Right.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for inviting me on. It was a really great idea that you had. I was really excited when you came up with it. It sounded like fun, and indeed it was. So thanks a bunch, and thanks, everyone, for listening.
Yeah, and I'll see you around the block and catch you around on Hacker Public Radio. And I'd like to remind those people that are listening that Hacker Public Radio is a community podcast network. You can contribute your own Ogcast, podcast, whatever you want to call it, to Hacker Public Radio just by going to the hackerpublicradio.org website and getting the contribute information, and we'd love to have you contribute.
Yeah, for sure. And an easy way to remember that is UO Ken a show.
Exactly. I've got the mug to prove that. Catch you later, Pokey.
All right, take it easy.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.